Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Jenna Gibson, Associate Director for Communication Technology and Programs here at KEI, and I will be your host today. In this episode, we are joined by Nancy Kelly and David Lasseter of Friends of Korea. Nancy is the president, and David is on the board of directors for the organization, which was started in the 1990s by returned Peace Corps volunteers who had served in South Korea. The goal of the organization is to foster cultural awareness and friendship between Americans and Koreans. Today, we talk about their experiences living in Korea during Peace Corps, the great transformation that Korea has made since that time, and some of the work that Friends of Korea has been doing to promote more understanding between the two countries. All right, Nancy, David, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
Could you begin by briefly explaining the history and mission of Friends of Korea?
Well, Friends of Korea, as I understand it, was started in the 1990s, well after Peace Corps had left Korea, but there were quite a few former volunteers who wanted to create an alumni group. A lot of the country, Peace Corps countries have these alumni groups, so we started one for Friends of Korea. And I think the mission, because Peace Corps in Korea was already closed, the mission was really focused on friendship and awareness between Americans and Koreans. We weren't necessarily supporting any particular activities in Korea, but so we really focused on that relationship.
So I know that both of you have had extensive experiences, both living in Korea and working on the U.S.-Korea relationship since then. What brought you to Korea at first, and what inspired you to keep working on these issues?
Chinese food. Back in undergraduate, I majored in international relations, but took a course in Chinese civilization. And the lovely professor often would say, well, let's go down to the local Chinese restaurant and talk about things. And literally, that's how it started, the fascination. But after undergrad, I went into the Peace Corps. That was in 1966. Taught English in a junior and senior high school in northern Gyeonggi-do. Following that, I went into grad school, picked up a degree in Asian studies, focused on Korea. And then after that, went in to work for the Peace Corps here in Washington, D.C. at headquarters. Following that, went back to Korea again with the Pearl Buck Foundation to manage their operations there. So that was the beginning of it. The love affair started there, and then it's continued ever since.
Well, in my case, it was my father who took me to Korea. My father worked for the predecessor agency of USAID. It was called USOM in those days, United States Overseas Mission. So I got to Korea actually a few months before the first Peace Corps volunteers arrived, because I got there, I think, in April or May of 1966, and I think the first volunteers arrived in September. But I was too young to be a Peace Corps volunteer at the time. I was in sixth grade. So I lived overseas for most of my childhood, but my favorite country was Korea. Of the many I lived in, I enjoyed Korea the most. So I decided very young that I was going to grow up and be a Peace Corps volunteer. And when I applied, I kept indicating I'd like to go to Korea. They kept offering me a variety of other options. And I said, no, really, I would love to go to Korea. And they said, well, you'll have to wait about 9 months. And I said, that's fine. That's what I'll do. So I went back and really enjoyed it. And it's a place that I feel very close to. And so I've continued my interest and affiliation with Korean-related activities.
Could you tell me a little bit more about your Peace Corps experience? I know that since it is a place that we no longer have Peace Corps, it's kind of a unique experience for you two.
Well, I had a BA in Asian history, a totally liberal arts person here, and so Peace Corps put me in the maternal child health program, which was a fairly steep learning curve for me. But, you know, you're young, you can do anything. So I was assigned to work with a midwife in a delivery clinic down south of Masan, or what was then Masan. And she was on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and needed help. And so she just taught me how to do what I needed to do to help her. And as my language got better, I did more and more. I mean, at the beginning, I could ask questions, but I couldn't understand any of the answers when I was talking to a woman during an appointment. So that got better. But Mrs. Che just needed lots of help, you know. And one of my favorite tasks was when we did get the baby, washing the baby, measuring the baby, and filling out the birth form, which I could do because I could read and write Korean. I just didn't necessarily understand what people were saying to me. And then the other thing that I did that I think was really helpful that she could not do was I could go out and do home visiting, and I could do a lot of education in the countryside and talk to women about the services that we had at the center and how important prenatal care was and proper nutrition, etc. And Mrs. Che, of course, had to be there 24 hours a day to deliver babies. So I think once my language got to be to a point where it was useful, that was probably my biggest contribution.
Well, let's see. Weijiangbu was a small town at the time. There was maybe 40,000 people there. So there was one boys' school, junior and senior high, and one girls' school. And when I went there, they had me teaching every level of middle school and high school. So that was six levels. So I didn't get to spend much time with any of the students. Once a week is all I saw them. And in terms of language learning, that was not really a good way to do it. So during that first year, I worked on a program to just teach high school kids 3 hours a week, every one of them, but had an uphill battle trying to convince the administration there that it was a better way to teach language. But fortunately, since I'd lived with the principal the first year, I had a little bit of influence, and he gave me the go-ahead on that. The other side of the experience was more on the non-school side, and I was living with the principal and his family, but he lived in Seoul. The school was in Weijiangbu, which was about an hour bus ride away at the time. And true to Peace Corps, I wanted to live in the town where I taught, but it was a very delicate situation trying to do that, because I'd have to move out of the principal's house, which was delicate, and then they couldn't find me a place in Weijiangbu that they thought was good enough. We bridged that little difficulty, and the second year I actually ended up living at the school. I had my own little room there, and I'm not sure about Nancy's facilities, but I had a pump outside my room. I could pump all the cold water I wanted, and of course the bathing facilities were non-existent. Get down to town once a week to take a bath, whether I needed it or not. And then, of course, the lavatory facilities were nearby. But it was a tremendous growing experience in terms of the first time being out on my own, being totally responsible for myself, and growing up. It was a wonderful time, hard but wonderful.
By the time I got there, we had graduated from a pump well to a spigot. I had a spigot of cold water, all the cold water I wanted. And certainly going to the moke, as we, Peace Corps language, you know, let's go take a moke. We still did that. And I remember the first New Year's that I was there. To my horror and astonishment, all the bathhouses in my town were closed for the holiday. But I hadn't bathed in time. So I'm sitting here looking at going 10 days without a bath, which just seemed like an overwhelming proposition. So I boiled up a lot of water and did a makeshift thing at home, which was really quite unpleasant.
I do remember one thing in particular. After I'd moved to the school, I thought I'd like to grow my own garden, have some fresh vegetables, just to give me something to do, etc. Well, the word got around, and there must have been a dozen of the local farmers that wanted to come over and give me advice on how to do this. And none of them would agree on anything. So it was another delicate situation where I had to thank them all for their advice and promise them all I'd take all of their wisdom into account and grow my own.
Do it the way you wanted to.
They actually gave me some good advice.
Oh, there
advice.
You go. There you go.
Advice.
All right, so for me personally, living in Korea was very eye-opening, both for me and for my family as well. At first, they were kind of terrified because Korea to them meant North Korea. Did you have a similar experience at the time? And how did your work in Korea and your work since then, how has that changed the mind of your family and friends here?
Well, when I was in Korea, we had some rough times with North Korea. Number one, there was an invasion of a commando force that came down from the north to try to assassinate the president and the head of the UN military, etc. And that was pretty hairy because they came through the valley where my town was. And then following that was the North Korean capture of the USS Pueblo, which was another very hairy experience. So we had some unfortunate times there with the North Koreans. But the good thing was that I used to write letters back to my draft board to tell them what was going on. And when I came back after my Peace Corps service and asked them whether I should go to grad school or are they going to draft me, they politely nodded their head and told me to just go to grad school. So it did have an outcome. In terms of the impact that it had on my family and friends, nobody that I knew had ever gone to Korea or knew anything about Korea. And consequently, anything I told them was brand new to them. Beyond that, though, going to grad school and picking up the Asian Studies degree helped me tell the story even better, especially when I got into Peace Corps headquarters because I was doing some small-time training for volunteers headed for Korea. So I could help them with the cultural, political, social aspects of things, as well as talk to their parents.
I actually was living in Korea during some of these incidents that you were talking about. I remember things were very tense when the commandos came in and hearing about it from my dad. I think that most of my friends knew very little about Korea. I don't remember anyone really talking about North Korea, but I think the image that most of my friends had at that point was really driven by the TV show MASH. And that was their image of the country, which is, of course, filmed in California, I believe. Korea, you know, maybe during the war it was that barren, but the thing that you miss by looking at MASH is just how extraordinarily beautiful the country is. You know, people had this image of a country still sort of at war and just a mess. And so one of the things that I realized when I got there and would get letters from friends was, you know, they just don't know how beautiful this place is. And so I did a lot of sending pictures home of temples or of, you know, just down where I was, down south of Masan along the coast. It's just stunning, and sending some of those pictures home and trying to get people to think of Korea a little bit differently. And I think to this day, unfortunately, when you talk about Korea to most Americans, they have some very quick shorthand stereotypes about what Korea is like. North Korea figuring prominently in that discussion.
And Psy, of course.
And yes. Well, among a certain age group.
Yeah. And South Korea has certainly changed a lot since the time that you went there first. What's it like to go back now and see how much has changed?
It was mind-blowing to go back in 2011. I went back for a revisit trip, which was a gift from the government and the people of Korea to former volunteers. It was just a wonderful opportunity to go back. I had been back a few times right after my service in 82 and 84, but to go back in 2011 and to actually go back to my town and to see the differences, it really just took your breath away.
My return to Korea, I had left in 1977 after my 2 years with the Pearl Buck Foundation and did not return for 30 years. It was 2008 when I returned on the first revisit program. My impression looking out the window as I came in was shock because it was green. There were trees everywhere. And when I had left, that was not the case. So that was the first impression. And then landing at Incheon Airport was an amazing experience, just amazing. And everything thereafter had changed so much. During that revisit trip, I was asked to give a talk at the COICA headquarters. COICA is the Korean organization has its own international volunteer operation. And I showed some slides of the Peace Corps experience, the time that I was there. And I was talking about the cultural shift that would take place in any volunteer organization. Well, the audience was made up of potential volunteers there that were in training as well as staff. And the reaction that people said was, this is not Korea. This is not the Korea they knew. They were shocked at what I was showing them. So the change had been absolutely dramatic, and all for the better.
I had a meeting with one of my coworkers on my revisit trip, and I gave her a copy of a picture book that we put together, Through Our Eyes, which is a fabulous collection of photos from volunteers through the 15-year period. And I gave it to her as a gift, and she opened it, and we were looking through it. And her son, who's probably 30, 35 years old, was with us. And she finally handed him the book and said, look at this. This is a Korea you don't know. And it's true. He was sitting there going, wow. He couldn't imagine that this was his career. So that was kind of amazing to see that.
In that book, there's a cute picture of Secretary General Ban Ki-moon at the UN going through the book. And he's stopping and looking in awe at the pictures that he's seeing because, again, it's his early childhood, but he hasn't seen it in years. Right. He was just fascinated by it.
You also have released recently this DVD called The Korean Transformation. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Where did the idea come from at first?
Well, it actually came out of the book. The pictures in the book were a compilation of photos that the returned volunteers had brought with them to the first several revisit programs, 08, 09, and 10. And they had been compiled and put into the book. Then in 2008, Kathy Stevens, the U.S. ambassador at the time, who was also a returned Peace Corps volunteer in Korea, had organized an exhibit of several of those photos, along with some photos from Kawika volunteers, and displayed them, arranged for an exhibit around Korea. We took that photo exhibit and brought it to the States and put that on tour in about 8 or 10 different cities. And that lasted through about 2013. At that time, we began to think, well, how can we continue to have the visibility and show Americans more of what Korea is like? So the idea for the DVD emerged, but we wanted to take it beyond just the photo exhibit and incorporate what contemporary Korea looks like. So the two ideas came together and formed the basis for the DVD that you have here. And it basically looks at the Peace Corps program, but also the whole transformation that has taken place over the last 60 years.
And just in case you don't know, this was a labor of love on David's part. I mean, you really took the idea and did all the work, and it was an amazing contribution that David made to Friends of Korea and to our mission. So.
This was released this summer?
We finally got it in its production in July.
Yeah. And how have you been reaching out to audiences through this DVD? Who have you been sending it to?
Well, we had a summer intern, and so we gave her the task of identifying people who are in Asian Korean studies programs at universities, and we gave her sort of a dozen different audiences, prospective audiences, and then, set her loose with Google. And she was able to come up, I think, with about 300 names that were not people that were in our system, and went out to them. We went to our own returned volunteers. We went to some Fulbrights that we knew of. And then the Korean Embassy obviously knew, and we went to the Council Generals and sort of had a bigger audience. So I think in the end, we sent out notes to 2,800 people. Uh-huh. And we ordered 500, and we're down to less than 100 now, I think.
Yes.
And once people got them, then we, for example, we had one person out in California who, when he saw it, said, send me 30 copies. I'm going to give it to every sister city in the States that has a sister city in Korea. So people are thinking of ways to use it, which is the point. We want people to see this as a tool in their attempt and their efforts to talk about Korea and to get Americans to understand the transformation and the excitement that we have about the friendship.
Nancy's being a little modest as well. We have received an overwhelming response to it. I have been keeping a log of the comments of the people who've received it. Right now, I have 6 pages of single-space comments from people, and they vary from, I want to show it to my family and friends, I want to share my Peace Corps experience in a way that I haven't been able to articulate. Universities and colleges have said, I want to use this in our curriculum. ESOL teachers have said, I want to use it in our curriculums to help Koreans learn English. Civic organizations say they want to get out and use it. It has been overwhelming, just overwhelming. Sometimes it really does bring tears when you read these comments. So it's working.
Yeah. And then there was an article, I guess about 10 days ago, in the Korea Times, in an interview with me, And at the end of the interview, we talked a bit about the DVD. And I think within 2 days, we had 15 requests from people who were outside of our orbit, people who'd never heard of Friends of Korea, a couple of whom wrote emails about how excited they were to find out there was such an organization, two of them being people who'd served in the U.S. Army in Korea and had returned home and really liked Korea, wanted to continue some sort of interaction with an organization that was doing something around Korea. So that was a new audience and exciting for us.
So one of the things that the DVD has done and is doing is to extend our visibility across the country in a more proactive way, getting the message out to people as opposed to passively waiting for them to come find us on the web, which we need to have to be sure.
When someone sees this DVD, what do you want them to come away with? What do you want them to be thinking afterwards?
Well, perhaps a little fuller understanding of the transformation that Korea has gone through. You know, I remember in the last few years, I've talked to people, to Americans, who will ask me where I served in Peace Corps, and I'll say in Korea, and they'll say, I didn't know we were sending anyone to North Korea. And I said, well, we're not. We never have. I served in South Korea, and I've had on more than one occasion people say, well, why? Why would you go to South Korea? They're doing fine. And then, you know, I have to sort of explain in 1966, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, just as young Koreans are sort of amazed about the images of Korea that we have in our Peace Corps photos, you have Americans who are just as amazed that Korea was ever a poor country or ever a country that was challenged. They know about the war, but somehow they don't necessarily sequence that into realizing there must have been a post-war period of reconstruction, etc. So for people to really have a much fuller understanding of the challenges that Korea faced and what they have accomplished, we are in the position now as former volunteers of being thanked quite often. Various events that we've been to, the Consul General of LA gave a very wonderful talk thanking former volunteers for our contributions. And in my response, I said, but, you know, let us never forget that really it was the Koreans, through their sheer determination and their hard work and their grit, that is why Korea is transformed. We happened to be there, and maybe we helped out a little bit, but the credit goes completely to Korea and to Koreans. And so to try and get people to understand that, I think, is what we're hoping for.
Understand and really appreciate it.
Yes.
And
yes.
Appreciate it, because it was a long, hard road.
Yes. And not a given that it was going to end up as, you know, remarkably successful as it has been.
So Friends of Korea started out as Peace Corps volunteers, returned Peace Corps volunteers, and now your website mentions that you include all kinds of people who have an interest in Korea or have spent time there. Mm-hmm. How has your membership changed since the founding of the organization, and how has that changed your focus?
Well, we're still in that period of transition, to be honest. Most of our members are still, you know, the great bulk of the membership base is still former volunteers. Although we have a lot of staff and language teachers, they weren't volunteers, but they were involved with Peace Corps. So it is still in transition. We're still looking at ways to reach out, try to get in front of other audiences, to make the case that we're an organization you want to be part of. Finding ways to do that, I think, but it's, you know, it's going to take some time, I think, to put ourselves out there. I think things like this DVD will help us because it provides an opportunity to start a conversation. But we're definitely trying to shift our materials and our focus and the way we present ourselves so that we're a much broader organization.
And I would add to that, next year, in conjunction with the Museum of Contemporary Korean History, they're going to do an exhibit on the Peace Corps, which is, of course, very nice, and we're very grateful for it. But that's sort of backward-looking. At the same time, Friends of Korea is organizing a symposium, a three-day symposium around that time period based on soft diplomacy and what Korea is doing, and it's forward-looking as well. So that's one of the things we're doing to bridge.
One of the big trends right now is, of course, Hallyu. On your website, you mentioned Gangnam Style and how people are starting to learn more about Korea through its pop culture. Have you tried to incorporate things like that into some of the programs or the events, things that you're doing?
We're working on it.
Interestingly enough, my husband, who's he's been to Korea for 2 weeks, but he's never lived there. He's all over K-pop. He loves it. So I'm sort of being introduced to it through him. He thinks it's fabulous. So I'm, you know, I get K-pop and Hallyu, but I really like Joyeon-pil, so that's probably very old school.
But well, I think one of the things that Nancy's doing with the board of directors is, as we transition forward, adding people to the board of directors who have a different perspective and a different experience of Korea mm-hmm. than just the return volunteers. So that includes people in different walks of life, as well as different age groups mm-hmm. that she's planning to bring on board to help with that transition.
How do you think things like Hallyu and some of the other, I guess, ways that Korea is becoming present in the U.S., including, you know, your smartphone and your washing machine and things like that, do you think that that has changed the way that Americans perceive Korea?
I think so. I think Americans think of Korean products as being very good products and having a wide range of products, you know, cars and Samsung TVs and computers, etc. So I think that that's a very positive impression that Americans have. I think one of the biggest changes that I've seen is just the fact that now Korean food is getting popular. And I remember when I came back from Peace Corps, I was hard-pressed to take someone to find a Korean restaurant, first of all. And then if I took friends for Korean food, I would be very careful about what I ordered for them because it was very unknown and very exotic. And, you know, people would have all sorts of negative things in their thoughts about kimchi. And so it's interesting to me now that we have food trucks outside of my office that serve tacos, Korean-style tacos. And there's a line. And people are ordering kimchi on their tacos. And so it's interesting to me how much of a change there's been in the sort of the popular American conception of Korean food. Maybe Americans are getting more experimental, might be part of it. I think also there have been some chefs like David Chang and some of the sort of captured the popular imagination through their cookbooks and their personalities. For me, that's been a nice change because I actually have a neighbor who wants to go out for Korean food. And I can't imagine 20 years ago that I would have had a neighbor that they would have said, oh, yeah, maybe Thai food. But Korean food, oh, no, I can't do Korean food.
I think one measure of the popularity and the growth of Korean food is that just about everybody knows what kimchi is these days.
True. And it's got a good reputation for being healthy.
Yeah, Michelle Obama was talking about it.
Right.
Know. What's next for Friends of Korea? What are some of your goals for the organization over the next few years?
Well, obviously this transition that we're trying to accomplish. You know, the last volunteers left Korea in 1981. I was one of the last of the people to leave. So we're not getting younger as a group. We need to get other people involved. And so to try and reach out and find ways to get other people involved. And also, I think building on this DVD and sort of what it is that our mission is, finding ways to promote an understanding and discussion about Korea and about Korean Americans and ways that we can understand each other better.
And to add to that, I would also say that the future is very bright for Friends of Korea because there's just an increased interest in things Korean, both South and North, and a dearth of knowledge other than academic, which most people don't want to go through. Spreading some popular informational pieces out to the population, I think, is going to be quite welcomed. And there's just so much opportunity, so many opportunities for us to talk about and display and put the spotlight on to help Americans understand Korea better. It's almost endless. It's almost mm-hmm. endless.
Is there anything else that you want our audience to know about Friends of Korea or about your experiences with Korea?
One thing I want to mention is, though it's informal, we are exploring the possibility of the distribution of the DVD to the school system in Korea because there is a dearth of information in the contemporary school system about how they got to where they are. kids these days, I know that sounds funny, but the population, the younger population, takes for granted all the things that they see and do without an understanding of the journey that it took to get there. So there's some feelers being put out about that.
I would invite anyone who's interested in what we do to visit our website or like us on Facebook. We do have a lot of activities around the Washington area that we're involved in, so there are lots of ways to come and meet members of Friends of Korea, and, you know, if you're interested in it, to get involved.
All right. Nancy, David, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you again next time.